Victory Conditions by Elizabeth Moon. Narrated by Cynthia Holloway. Copyright 2008 by Elizabeth Moon. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Elizabeth Moon, care of Jabberwocky Literary Agency, and was produced in the year 2009 by Tantor Media Incorporated, which holds the copyright thereto. Chapter 1. Kai Bada glanced around the table at the captains crowded into her office. It still felt a little unreal, but here they were, all waiting for her to say something. Argelos and Pettigrew, there from the beginning. Yamanai, who'd been Argelos's military advisor and who now captained the stealth observer they'd captured from the pirates. Ransom and Baskerville, the two surviving captains of Ransom's Rangers. Major Douglas of McKinsey Military Assistance Corporation, assigned as MMAC's liaison to her. His assistant, Master Sergeant Callie Pitt, seemed quite at ease standing in a corner. Our main problem, as I see it, is that we're always reacting to Turek, Kai said. We don't know much about him, what his goals are, besides killing people and getting power. And we can't understand any of the transmissions we've overheard. We've got to find a way to get better intel. McKinsey might share data with you, Major Douglas said, if you don't mind me butting in. He smiled at Kai. I don't mind, Kai said. Before we go into jump, would you like to ask them about that? You particularly want information about their language, any history anyone can dig up, is that right? Oh, I wouldn't mind knowing where they are right now, where they're going next, and in what force, Kai said, grinning. If we knew that, we'd be hauling mass, Douglas said, all of us. But I can ask if any of our linguists know the language. You gave them copies of the transmissions, right? I did, yes, Kai said. And another thing. I know I need a staff structure. We talked about that before. But with over 40 ships to command, I need something now, before we get to Cascadia. Think any of those privateers will give you trouble? Argelos asked. Kai was mildly amused to find that the former privateer no longer considered himself one of them. I doubt it, Kai said. Aunt Grace sent them. She'd have checked them out. You don't just need a staff, Douglas said. You need a combat control center. You can't command 40 ships from the bridge on this one. It's too crowded, and it doesn't have the right communication set up. Your shipboard ansibles are an incredible advance, but they can't do everything, and they are bulky. My office? Isn't adequate, Captain Yamanai said. I agree with Major Douglas. Running the additional communications cables in here would be next to impossible, and they must be shielded cables. You're talking over 40 ships now, and maybe more if the Moscow Confederation sends ships from Cascadia. That's a lot of equipment, not just for communications, but also for scan, if you're going to have the data you need during a battle. I don't know how you'd get one in this ship. You'd have to practically rebuild it, I'd think. But then you've told us it needs serious work anyway. On our ships, the CCC is built in when the hulls are laid, Douglas put in. But I understand that some systems have modular CCCs that can be retrofitted to vessels. We don't, but maybe they can do that at Cascadia. Before we go FTL, we should ask Stella that, Kai said, adding another line to the list in her implant. A long list now. Since she had heard about the Slaughter Key privateers on their way to Cascadia, turned down McKinsey's offer of a commission, and accepted the suggestion of a liaison to travel with her. In a few short hours, her little group would leave the McKinsey headquarters world and head for Cascadia Station, and she would have to be ready, when they arrived, to take charge in reality as the commander she had hoped to become. We'll have two jump transitions on the way, Argelo said. Do you want communication there or not? They're both just waypoints, aren't they? Uninhabited systems? Yes, but the Ansibles are up in both right now. We might find out what's going on.
Good idea, Kai said. We don't want to delay more than we have to, but stripping bulletins from Ansibles doesn't take long. Everyone should do it, so you can each run your own analysis and we can share. Intership communication only by onboard Ansibles, no matter how close we are. Her desk comm chimed, Hugh Pratang's code.
Yes, Hugh? Kai said.
Last loads coming aboard here, Captain. Last for Sahara's gift is a half hour out. Bassoon's complete. McKinsey's traffic control officer has given us a priority departure slot in 2.5 hours. Next after that's at 3.5. Thought you'd want to know.
Thanks, Hugh, Kai said. To the others, she said.
We'd better get with it, hadn't we? I'd like to take that early slot, so this meeting will have to be short.
For another hour, they hammered out the organization of skeleton staff, to be filled out once they arrived at Cascadia, then dispersed to their various ships. Kai made the calls courtesy required to the McKinsey officers who had assisted them, sent out data burst messages to Stella, Grace, and Raff, and then went to the bridge as they undocked and headed out toward the jump point. Nexus 2, Headquarters of Interstellar Communications. Raff Dunbarger, acting CEO of Interstellar Communications, looked at the monitor in the central control room of ISC's detention center. The man in the security cell looked older than his official years and very tired. All the gloss of wealth and power had leached away, leaving his face exposed, the dissatisfaction and ambition clear to see.
"You sure you've got everything?" Raff asked his new internal security chief.
As sure as we can be. His implant was coded to self-destruct if removed, of course, but we were able to block that and examine it, download everything we could, and before we took his implant, we'd done a full panel, except for what you told us not to.
Faint regret colored his tone.
I have my reasons, Raff said.
I'm sure, Sarah Dunbarger, not arguing, just saying.
Raff watched the man on the monitor shift his weight on the narrow bed. Now came the question, the final question at the end of all the data collection. What to do with the man who had destroyed his childhood and much of his adulthood, who had separated him from his father, who had schemed and plotted and finally attacked his own mentor, Raff's father, who had contrived the killing of Raff's sisters, the death of his surviving sister's husband and child. He surely deserved death, but what death could encompass his crimes? And what about legal procedures? He'd made discreet inquiries, and the answer came back that it was ISC's problem. The government didn't want a noisy, embarrassing, expensive trial any more than he did. They wanted the problem removed. He's 100% liability, he'd been told, but he'd been told that about himself when it wasn't true. Was it ever true? The man had intelligence, talents, charisma. He had earned the trust of the board, of Raff's father. Could he have been, in some way, as misunderstood, or at least as complex as Raff?
Would have been easier to kill him that first day, Gary said.
True, Raff sighed. No matter what he did, leaving Louis Permina alive would be too dangerous. The man was a threat, not only to him and his family, but also to ISC, Nexus, and the new Alliance. In the heat of his early rage, he could have enjoyed killing the man himself. But now his stomach churned at the thought.
You going to tell him?
He expects it, Raff said. He's not stupid.
They always hope, Gary said.
I'll speak to him, Raff said. He wasn't sure why he felt that he must, but he knew if he didn't, he would regret it forever.
Not without a guard, Gary said. No, Raff said. I'm not stupid either, Gary grunted, and Raff grinned at him. And not you. I'll take whoever's on duty in the section.
It was only a short walk to the guard station at the entrance to the block of cells. He let the guard open the cell and then followed him in. The guard stepped to one side, stun rod ready.
Enjoying yourself, aren't you? Lou Permina said. His gaze flicked to the guard and back to Raff's face. His smile widened. Still the scared little boy, are we?
Cautious, Raff said, keeping the edge out of his voice. Mild interest, no more.
You might take it as a sign of respect.
Not from me, Lou said. He put his hands behind his head. The guard shifted slightly, watchful.
Having fun with the company? I left you a few surprises.
As much as possible, Raff said.
My family?
Judging by the sneer on his face, he didn't really care about them.
Are fine, Raff said. He waited a predictable 2 beats. No conjugal visit before the end.
She refused, Raff said. Fermina's wife had done more than refuse. She had gone into hysterics at the mention of that possibility.
Ah, well then, I presume this is the obligatory so long, farewell, see you in hell session. Or are you going to go all mushy and ask why I betrayed your father's trust?
I have no interest in why you did it, Raff said.
Lou shrugged. Well then, get it over with. Unless you're planning to drag it out with torture or something. I know you. You can't pretend you don't enjoy killing.
Raff smiled down at him, holding Permina's gaze until the man had to look down.
I ration myself, he said then.
He nodded to the guard, who opened the door and turned to leave.
You coward! Lou screamed and lurched forward.
Even as Raff spun, drawing his own weapon, the guard's stunner struck Lou. He collapsed, clawing at his neck.
Go on, Sarah. I'll take care of this, the guard said.
Quickly, Raff said. He holstered his pistol. No playtime.
Absolutely, the guard said.
Raff waited in the corridor outside. After a moment, the guard emerged.
Autopsy?
No, Raff said. The family has requested no autopsy and no funeral.
I'd say dispose of the body to medical research, except that he might have hidden something else nasty internally. If you can remove the implant in a secure facility, do that. Direct cremation's safest. Be sure to fill out the paperwork.
Back in his office, Raff made the necessary calls. Lou's wife cried, more with relief than sorrow, but he still felt compelled to comfort her. The daughter Lou had abused listened stony-faced and said only, "Good." Raff's sister Penny nodded once, then burst into tears, clearly relief this time, and his mother on the comm did the same. Official reaction was subdued, but clearly glad that ISC had handled ISC's problem. He felt none of the exaltation he had felt before, only a peculiar sense of loss that he finally identified as grief. Lou Permina was dead, and deservedly so, but he had been as human as Raff himself. He thought suddenly of Kai, and her moment of compassion for the spy they had caught on her ship. She would have understood this. How could someone have gone so wrong? He informed the board that afternoon at their regular meeting. Lou Permina is dead, he said.
He tried to attack me in the cell. A guard killed him. The death was reported to all the proper authorities. The family declined to receive the remains or hold a funeral. They asked that ISC dispose of them. He was cremated immediately.
About time, Vaclav Bach said. He had urged the need for Permina's death more than once. Poisonous creature. Others murmured agreement. No one wanted to be seen as defending Permina.
Next, Raff said. The latest medical report on my father.
At first, they had demanded such reports almost daily, but lately he had noticed more time between questions and less apparent interest.
His speech has improved, though slowly. His doctors, however, hold out no hope that he will be able to take up his duties as CEO, even part-time, within the next 4 months. And they do not think he will ever be able to use an internal implant.
Not even on the other side? Vaclav Box asked.
Apparently not, Raff said. Because of the existing damage, they're concerned that any manipulation to create the pocket could cause seizures, or worse. An external device might be possible, but he had a right-sided implant his whole life.
He looked down for a moment, imagining what it must be like without an implant, without that reassuring presence.
We had all hoped, of course, that the neural regeneration would proceed more swiftly. Then he could have gotten back to his own life, though he had no idea what that life might be. Glances passed back and forth across the table. For a long moment, no one said anything. Finally, Box cleared his throat.
About your father.
Yes.
You know I've talked to him. So have some of the others. I'm certainly aware he's not what he was. And, for the most part, we don't want him back.
Box paused a moment, clearly trying to gauge Raff's reaction. Raff felt as if a load of rock had dropped on his head. He couldn't think of anything to say.
I'm one of his oldest friends. I still consider him a friend, but he got us into this whole mess. His judgment was faulty long before his injury, or perhaps it had been tampered with, but that doesn't really matter.
You've canvassed the board, Raff found his voice at last, looking around at them all.
Informally, yes.
You can't blame everything on him. It was Lou.
He was fooled by Permina, to the point of repudiating his own son,
Box went on, enumerating the same things Raff had struggled not to see.
The policies he approved led directly to the mess we're in now, the erosion of our ability to protect our monopoly, the failure to gain control of new technology, the theft of our intellectual property. Fermina may have been the mastermind, but your father did not see the dangers.
Neither had the board, Raff thought. They had all been fooled just as much as his father.
Had they ever done anything more than nod yes and take their compensation?
Then, if you don't want my father, you won't want me, he said. He felt let down and relief at the same moment.
Not at all, Raff. You did see the problems. You've clarified them for all of us. You've started turning the corporation around. We need you and we want you. Now and for the foreseeable future. I don't believe, and I'm sure the board concurs, that there is anyone else who could possibly save as much of what we had.
The others nodded. The weight fell back on his shoulders. He wanted to yell at them, insist he was not the one for the job. But he knew. He knew he was.
The only problem, Box said slowly, is this thing with the Vada family and your relationship with them. On this, I stand with your father, and I think I speak for most of the board. There are reasons to be concerned. They are involved in too many of the things that have gone wrong, that have cost us.
You can't seriously believe. Raff stopped, faced with that double row of stony faces.
They did believe it.
He would have to change that.
They would have to understand that their future lay with the Vada Alliance. Moscow Confederation, Cascadia Station. Stella Vada, acting CEO of Vada Transport, watched a crawler line move across the screen of her desk comp, silenced as she liked it, and flicked for full download. The columns of figures she'd been working on faded, The screen showed a newsman from Central Cascadian News Service standing in front of another screen, which showed an explosion repeating over and over.
Just in, a vid apparently sent by Ansible to at least a dozen system governments. We're not sure of the source, but analysis suggests that it is, as it claims, an actual unedited vid. The person you will see identifies himself as Gamus Turek and claims to represent a large force. I must warn you, this vid contains disturbing images and language, unsuitable for children. But we feel it is urgent.
Stella felt cold to her bones. Gamus Turek, the man Kai insisted had been connected to Osman Vada and the attack on their family, and behind the disruption of the Ansible network, and the conquest of systems like Bissonette and Polson. The screen changed, so the explosion filled it. This time, it did not repeat, but changed to a man in a dark red and black uniform, standing against a background of a night sky, arms folded across his chest. He seemed tall, though without any background clues, it was impossible to say how tall. Dark-haired, dark-eyed, a strong-boned face that might have been attractive if not for the expression.
"You will all know my name," he said.
He had a strong accent, but Stella had no difficulty understanding his words.
"You will all fear my name."
He seemed to be looking through the camera, right into Stella's eyes. She felt exposed for a moment, even though she knew he could not possibly see her. He had to have personality mods to convey that much command presence in a recording.
"I am Gamus Turek," he said.
He paused, his mellow voice perfectly modulated to convey strength, determination, menace, was far more frightening than the harsh bellow of a thriller actor.
"You must understand this," he said. "I can isolate your world at any moment. My fleets control the spaceways. My forces can disrupt Ansible communications whenever I wish. I have many allies. Their forces, too, are at my command. I have more ships than any system militia and weapons that can turn your homeworlds into cinders."
A carefully measured pause.
"If you force me to use them against you, I will have no mercy. You and those you love, everything you have worked for, will die in an instant. Here is one proof of it."
Now the scene showed an expansive office where well-dressed civilians, all clearly humods, backed away from armed men wearing Turek's maroon and black colors.
"They argued with my commands," Turek said. "The troops fired in short bursts, and people fell, some screaming at first, until at last the room fell silent."
"They did not obey,"
Turek said in a voiceover, as the scene shifted to a brief battle between a rock-throwing mob and the soldiers.
"That was Polson," Turek said. "I own it now. I own its jump points. I own its Ansibles. Only my people live on the world once called Polson. And it is not the only one."
The scene changed to a ruined city, smoke rising from shattered buildings.
"Here, someone killed one of my men. Just one. Hundreds died here. Maybe thousands. It doesn't matter to me. I do not tolerate disobedience."
He did not sound angry, but like someone stating an undeniable fact. The scene shifted again, this time to an image of an Ansible platform exploding, then again to Turek standing as before.
"Do not make the mistake of thinking this is an idle boast, or that you can save yourselves by banding together. It is too late for that. My agents are everywhere.
Those of you who conspire against me will regret it.
He smiled, a chilling smile that was at the same time alluring. Stella remembered from her brief bad affair what strings were being pulled here.
Remember my name. Expect me. I am coming.
The announcer reappeared. We have no way of knowing whether this is some kind of scam or whether this person really exists and actually is behind the recent disturbing events we reported some time ago. The apparent overthrow of the governments of Bissonnette and Poulsen by a foreign force. But we felt this was important enough to bring to the public. We have already sent this vid to the Moscow Confederation Defense Department, who are now analyzing it further. We will keep you informed. Stella tabbed back to the spreadsheet she'd been working on. Cascadia felt a lot less safe than it had a few minutes ago. She had been so sure that nothing would happen here until Kai reappeared, and then Kai would take care of it, or someone would, and she could go on leading Vada Enterprises and Vada Transport. And there was nothing she could do, really, except make sure that the new onboard Ansibles came off the production line as fast as possible. One production line might not be enough. She might as well work on costing a proposal. 10 minutes later, her implant schedule reminded her that her ward Toby would be back soon from school. Foreign crisis or no foreign crisis, she could not put off any longer a serious talk about a purely personal matter. She waited until Toby had engulfed his usual after-school snack before broaching the topic she knew would upset him.
Toby, I need to speak with you about your friendship with Zori.
Why? From his expression, he suspected the reason.
Her family isn't happy with it, for one thing. If you were both older, that wouldn't matter.
Well, it wouldn't matter on Slaughter Key. I'm not sure what the courtship rituals are on such a courteous place as this.
But you're not older, and her family has a right to influence her choices.
She likes me. Toby's face settled into a stubborn expression. Zori was his first girlfriend, and he had fallen as hard as a boy his age could fall.
Yes, so I gather from her mother. But their concern is twofold. We are not old Cascadian family, and we are the wrong religion.
We can't help it that we just got here, Toby said. It's not like we're criminals or anything.
No, but...
Stella sighed. This was a part of the caution common to prominent families that she had not understood herself at Toby's age, and her own stubbornness had caused no end of trouble.
They're just being careful of her, Toby. They think, right or wrong, doesn't matter, that she will be happier with someone of her own kind. Someone whose family they know.
She doesn't care about those boys, Toby said. She cares about me.
That may be, but it doesn't change the fact that her family would prefer she not care about you that much.
We're not doing anything, Toby said, flushing in a way that suggested they probably were, though Stella hoped not as much as she herself had.
All we did was... kind of, you know... I mean... I touched her hair.
Stella knew, to the marrow of her bones, what Toby was feeling, and also what magnitude of trouble that could cause.
They're her parents. They don't want her to get in trouble.
No, of course not, but they...
Are her parents, Stella repeated. Look, I've had 2 long talks with her mother. Explained,
Stella caught herself. Telling Toby she'd told Zori's mother that the two were in no danger, that it was their first attraction, that they'd get out of it faster if the parents stayed calm, would only make Toby determined to prove how serious they were and how permanent their affection.
I explained that we were a respectable, even prominent family on Slaughter Key. That you were a reasonable young man. They're not accusing you or her of anything wrong.
They agree that you are intelligent and well-mannered, but they're adamant that she quit.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?